Average Podcast. News, tips, and deep thinking. From code to common ground, about your average podcast. Where fresh AI is found, about your average podcast.
I'm Michael McCrory, product owner, automation specialist, and AI enthusiast in state government.
And I'm Jill Baber, former data scientist who loves connecting the dots between numbers, policy, and people.
We're here to cut through the hype and make AI make sense. This is
Bot Your Average Podcast.
Nailed it.
All right. Well, welcome to the podcast, everyone. Obviously, I'm Michael McCrory, as you can see by my title down here. And this is my co-host, Jill Baber.
Hi.
Do you want to tell the folks at home what a little bit about our podcast?
Sure. Michael and I started podcasting actually when we used to be coworkers, but we're no longer coworkers. And
huge
so we
fight.
Wanted to. It was. it was for personal reasons that I left specifically related to Michael. Mm-hmm. But we were having a lot of fun setting it up, so we decided to keep going. And the focus of our podcast is really talking through the news, things that have happened in a way that normal people can relate to, because I look at how we talk about AI now and I wonder how anyone understands anything about it.
Yeah, and it's a constantly changing field, right? And it's kind of fortuitous that our first episode here is on the same day ChatGPT 5.0 launched. And obviously there's a lot of hype around that.
I was told it launched, but I still don't have it.
Sorry. Some people have it. Others, hopefully we'll have it by the end of the day.
So you have it, Michael.
Yeah, I got it just right before we started recording. So I haven't had too long to play around with it. I haven't noticed too much difference. Like, I think it's a little bit better, but that could also be placebo effect. I haven't really pushed it super hard. My first question I asked it was, how can I help get rid of wasps underneath my house? And I feel like that it answered it pretty similarly to when I asked 4.0.
Are there really that many answers to that question?
I just need a good one because I've tried so many products. There's still wasps.
How about gasoline and a match?
Yeah, okay. I thought about that. I'd probably hire a professional for that before I just start dumping gasoline under the foundation of my house.
That's a good idea. So did you watch the release today?
Yeah, I watched it on mute because I was in a meeting. And then I went back and rewatched it, and I mean it's those demos are already like pretty cool. I saw one of the demos is it the Borealis effect, whatever, that causes why airplanes are shaped the way they are? And then I saw people immediately take to Twitter and say, well, actually, it didn't explain it right. Like, it started explaining common misconceptions on a demo that was supposed to demonstrate how it wasn't hallucinating nearly as much anymore. But such is the way of live demos. I mean, I can relate to that.
Well, I remember learning, too, that if things don't go wrong in the demo, then it's probably not a real demo.
That's true. At least we know it was an actual live demo of the model. But then I saw a lot of the sentiment, too, online change towards, oh, thank goodness, AGI isn't actually here. We all can keep our jobs for probably 2 more years, because if it wasn't coming with the hype of GPT-5, I think we're all pretty good for actually a while. We're looking at 2030 before anything happens was kind of the sigh of relief, it seemed like, online.
That is absolutely right. I love to look at all of the AI-related Reddits, and always, like, all the 15-year-old boys on Reddit. That's according to my husband. The sole group of people on Reddit is me and 15-year-old boys.
I thought a bunch of 30 and 40-year-olds, millennials.
Yeah, I think so, too. My husband's not on it, so he has no idea.
He's cool.
But always, like, tons and tons of different conversations about how, like, oh, AI is coming, so I don't feel like I need to, like, sad ones about how I don't know what to do with my life because my life will be pointless. And I have never been the person to think that 5 was going to, like, absolutely change everything, but a lot of people did.
I mean, when you think back to the release between, well, GPT-2 before it really even hit mainstream, and then GPT-3, then 3.5. I mean, the jump between, that was a huge leap. And then between 3.5 and 4, that was still a pretty big leap, it felt like. And then the O, as we get into the reasoning models, those all felt like pretty generational leaps. I always go back to it's a lot of the large language models are rated off vibes. And they kind of pointed to that in the presentation as well when they said, well, it only outperformed in X test by about 3 or 4% more. So how do we actually communicate the benefit of the new model when we're only outscoring a couple percentage points? And a lot of it, I seen, seemed like it came down to the feel of the responses.
It's so complicated, though, because, I mean, you could design a model to score well specifically on a particular type of test. So, like, the metrics are easily fudged.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily mean anything, but I like to think about it like how you think about human intelligence. Like, there's no one, I mean, we have an IQ test, but there's problems with the IQ test, and it doesn't measure everything. And so there's different types of intelligence. Like, we don't have a good way to measure how people are intelligent, and AI isn't people. It is just a set of algorithms, really. But it should still be difficult to measure.
Yeah. And it feels like all the tests too, like you said, are easily fudged, and one outperforms it on one test, but what does that actually mean? Because a lot of it just feels, to the average person, just made up. Like, what does this metric actually mean? And would you even notice it in real world performance? Because a lot of times I can't tell if one model performed better on one test, if it actually equates to me noticing an improvement in the answers I'm getting.
I have pro accounts for several different models, and the thing that always interests me is that they're different, but not necessarily, like, they're different, they're just different products. Like ChatGTP, like, you can tell is optimized to be addicting. It always encourages you to continue to talk to it. It's always extremely positive. It's very encouraging. Whereas something like Claude will, I mean, you could tell that it's optimized to be a little more simple. It's shorter answers. There's a lot of brevity. It's very simple. Like, you can tell that it's taking up a lot less energy. You know, it's there to be a tool, whereas ChatGTP wants you to, you know, use it and be it. The friend. And I just started using Grok on Michael's suggestion. and actually it surprised me. It was totally different. Claude and ChatGTP like have a tendency to give different answers, but they're overall the same. Grok gave me entirely different answers on certain things, which I thought was really fascinating. Like, you can tell it's just designed differently. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily better. But the thing that I thought was interesting there is it encouraged me to use outside resources more. Whereas ChatGTP encouraged me to come back to ChatGTP and keep talking about things. But Grok was like, have you considered journaling about this or talking to a friend about this? Like, it gave, like, better real-world advice for the particular stuff that I've asked it so far.
It's interesting. I definitely feel like the philosophy at XAI is, like, go fast and fail fast, at the detriment to the model itself at certain points. Like, they'll just push updates quickly and try and iterate as fast as they can, which I guess makes sense because I'm pretty sure SpaceX is the same way. But you can tell, like, Anthropic and OpenAI definitely put a lot more time and thought on the guardrails of their models to provide more polished user experiences, I would say. Not entirely true. Grok is pretty good. It's gotten better and better. But I noticed, too, with GPT-5, there's the think quicker or think harder options, too. Like, you can switch between GPT-5 thinking, which is Grok 4's, like, think harder mode, or just GPT-5, which is the quick response. So it's interesting. You can kind of tune whether you want something to be more verbose or just get a quick answer to your simple question.
I'm really interested in seeing how those models act just in comparison to each other. I love comparing different models. It really helps you understand how they work and, like, asking. I love to ask it questions. I encourage people to ask it questions you know the answer to, especially now that GPT-5 is being advertised as something that's as good as an expert. Like, find something you're an expert in and see for yourself what you think.
Yeah, I'm too poor to afford it, but GPT-5 Pro is being advertised as research-grade intelligence, and I'm pretty sure that's how Grok 4 Super Heavy, or Grok 4 Heavy, was being advertised as well, was research-grade.
What does that mean, though?
I don't know. I'd love to try them out and find out, but I'm not paying $200 and $300 a month to find out.
Like, the point of research is discourse. Like, if I ask it something and you ask it something and we've got it on voice mode, will they, like, hash it out together? Like, that to me is what research grade would mean.
It would be interesting. I think what it really means is, I guess I can't speak to GPT-5 Pro, is, like, the use of agents. I know Grok 4 Heavy, you can run up to, like, 4 separate agents in parallel as they all go out and gather information for you. And I'm thinking GPT-5 Pro is the same way, but don't quote me on that. It'll be interesting. I am surprised at the move for them to make it free, though, or include GPT-5 in the free tiers. It really seems like they just shifted. Like, I think a while ago I heard GPT-5 is going to just kind of combine all the old models, and it kind of seems that way. Like, they just have phased out everything for GPT-5 being the new base.
Definitely. Well, whenever Sam Altman talks, the head of ChatGPT, blah, 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 OpenAI. he always is quick to talk about how he sees AI as something that will give everybody a leg up. And so I think that they would have to release it for everyone if he's going to continue to say that.
Yeah, it is interesting to say that at one point and call yourself OpenAI. And I am glad they did release some, I'm going to mess this up, GPT OSS 20 and GPT OSS 120 that you can download locally and run on your computer, and they're free open models. I was pretty impressed with that, but also kind of contradicts OpenAI when you're charging $200 a month for the top of the line models. I wasn't too impressed with GPT the 20 billion parameter model. I wasn't too impressed running that locally on my computer. But
what are you doing on them to run them and test them?
I was using LLM Studio, which is okay. A pretty easy to use application where you can download and run it. I was trying to use VLLM within the Linux subsystem within Windows and install it through Linux. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot how much I hate trying to get things set up through terminals. So I just used LLM Studio in the end.
Is there a way that, like, regular people who aren't tech nerdy guys to use,
I'd use LLM Studio? Yeah, that's an easy EXE download. When you install it, because I reinstalled it the day that they dropped those parameters, it's in their install wizard. Would you like to download GPT OSS 20? Because they knew everyone would be using it. So it's literally in the install wizard, and it installs it for you right away, which is actually really cool. So that's super simple, just like setting up any program.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was refreshing after trying to get it running through the Linux subsystem.
What are you doing with it? What is the point of having your own LLM running locally?
I mean, it's nice. You don't have to pay a subscription. You don't have to worry about being limited after so many questions. And privacy. Sam Altman talked to we listened to the Theo Von podcast with Sam Altman from last week, and he was saying, yeah, people are putting really deep personal things into ChatGPT, and none of that is private. Especially if they were requested for any information or subpoenaed, they will turn that over, and all that information is being used to train on the model. So that's something to keep in mind too. If you're privacy focused, it's always good to run it locally.
I think that's a really good point, and it helps people understand that that's available to them, especially because with any, you know, free application, you are the product, so your data is being harvested.
And even if you pay for it too, at certain points, you're still feeding into it and paying for it. The hardest pill for me to swallow too is when I pay $20 a month and then I still hit limits on using ChatGPT. Yes. It's really frustrating. It's like, okay, I'm a second class citizen because I can't afford, I'm not going to pay $200 a month just for the top tier and unlimited use.
The biggest question I have is in the release today, they talked a lot about like how it can create applications for people and do coding, and you can create your own websites or your own games. And how are people going to deploy that? Like, neat, you wrote some code. What does that mean?
And that's a lot of the current state of vibe coding, I feel like. It's like single-use applications. They're not truly interconnected, fully built-out worlds. I mean, we could talk about Google Genie too, which was blowing up online. It allows you to play like a couple minutes though in like these, they call it a world model. It allows you to enter this interactive world created by AI, but it's only like 2-3 minutes of gameplay. It's not really a game that you can engage with. It's like a snippet. So I still think we're a ways off from like having actually fully deployable, but like, yeah, you can use the tool, but you're not going to make, you can make like fun one-off games. I imagine the next Flappy Bird, I'm showing my age, the next Flappy Bird will be made within ChatGPT. Some viral hit will be a small game that's vibe coded.
It is interesting to me how much they focus on coding, which, I mean, of course it's good. It's made by people who are coders by, you know, that's their job. That's what they do. So it knows, they know how to create something that codes. But isn't that also replacing them?
Yes. There's been a lot of talk too about with companies, because it can perform at about junior software dev levels. It's replacing those junior positions, which is highly unfortunate. I feel lucky I got my job at the state before, like right out of college in a junior position, because they seem to just be evaporating from the market. And it's like, okay, that's fine. Like the company's like, yeah, saving a lot of money by not having to hire a bunch of junior devs and making their current employees more effective. But where does that leave it in a couple years? And where does that leave all those young people who feel like they never got a chance out of college, like no one would hire them, and they spent 4 years on their degree and they can't get jobs now? What does that look like for society is an interesting question too. Have a bunch of massively in debt, angry young people, that's usually not a good combination.
Well, that's going to be true for like almost any sort of thought position. You know, anything that requires thinking, a lawyer, a doctor. I mean, you'll always need the people that are advanced, especially because there are still so many questions that don't have answers necessarily. And so you can't just plug in AI and be like, okay, the AI will tell us what to do. But how are we supposed to gain those people as a society if they are never juniors? Like you, that's part of being experienced, is gaining the experience. Like no one is leaving school, everybody thinks they're leaving school, you know, ready to perform at the top level, but that's not actually how it works.
It was interesting, and they kind of talked about this in the Theo Von podcast too, and it was interesting to me. I mean, obviously Sam Altman's gonna try and be as optimistic as he can, but I do feel like he's generally an optimistic person, because he's talking about like the job of like podcasting. What, could you predict that 100 years ago? Like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't sound like real work. And how the definition of quote unquote real work will change over time. And I thought that was kind of interesting too. It's like, yeah, this sucks in the short term, but it also sucked too when the automatic ball return was made in bowling alleys for all the people who used to have to manually go grab the ball. Now that was replaced by robots, but the nature of their jobs changed. I mean, same with the Industrial Revolution. Stuff changed from real work to... So I think stuff will shift and change and maybe allow more creative fields to be opened up to more people. And different jobs will kind of evolve out of this. At least I hope so.
That's true. We never know what the future is going to look like. And it's never going to look like what we think.
And then we can keep guessing as much as we want, but we're probably going to be way off. I mean, thinking of, like, cell phones. Like, we really have predicted that. But, like, in 2008, before the iPhone came out, like, I would have predicted we'd have had cooler phones by now because they've all just kind of stuck as slabs.
Right? They should have, like, another interface. They were getting smaller and smaller. And then that was the joke, is they were all going to be, like, the size of a grain of rice. And they got really big.
I mean, we have foldables.
And now they're still big.
Which is kind of cool. I think the next evolution in conjunction with the AI is, like, the wearables. Having AI built into your glasses and that can augment reality. And then you constantly have an AI interface on your face.
So, Michael, you, ever the futurist, never the optimist, you have... AI or wearable glasses. Tell us how that works. What do you do with them?
I don't have wearable glasses yet. I'm waiting for Meta's to come out with new ones, but I have VR headsets that I use for AR pass through. Right now I use a lot for fitness, but that it's kind of cool having AR fitness. So I just look at my wall back here and cool shapes come out of the wall at me that I punch. It's really fun, or I'll just watch YouTube videos while doing the dishes is another big use case for AR that I like.
So how are you seeing the dishes if you have it over your eyes? That's why I thought you had glasses.
There's three cameras here, like two pass-through and then a depth sensor right here. So it does a pretty good job at pass-through. Not quite as good as the Apple Vision Pro. I don't have one, but I've heard that's a little better at pass-through. But it's surprisingly good for a $400 headset. It produces the world pretty accurately that you can see and interact with things. It's funny when I'm talking with my wife, I look ridiculous wearing it, but I can see her perfectly fine with the pass through. You just have to like double tap and then it shows you your world. And then you can go back to your game by double tapping and it shuts out the world. It's pretty fun. But there's a lot of cool stuff like Meta Ray-Bans are kind of the first evolution of that. Like the truly wearable glasses. Right now those are audio only, but they're working on a version hopefully that will come out next year, I think, that will have a monochrome display in them, so you'll have a heads-up display integrated with Meta AI, which will be interesting.
I wonder if your brain has rewired itself differently because you have that experience using that.
It's interesting. I've been playing VR for a long time, and I feel like there's a couple times when I first started playing it, probably at the Valve Index, and you like your body starts to disconnect from your hands, like your hands no longer feel real when you come out of VR. That happens for like a week, and then it's fine. But there's definitely some rewiring that probably went on with that. It's a weird like phantom like. You're like, am I in a game? I can't. My hands feel weird. It's very. I can't describe it well, but when you have it, you're like, you just start looking at your hands, and you're like, whoa.
People must think you're high all the time.
Yeah, like I said, only lasts for a couple of days, and then you get over it.
That's but, really interesting.
But the societal effect, I feel like, of the actual AR glasses that you're wearing out in public all the time. Like, we're already so distracted by our phones in public when having a conversation with a person. Is that just going to become untenable when we have constant information beaming directly in our eye when we're directly looking at someone trying to have a conversation, but you're getting notifications.
That's really interesting you say that. I remember when I was an undergrad, I had a blog, and I went back and read it years later, and I wrote a post about how iPods were destroying society because instead of like talking to people, people just walked around campus with their music in and didn't talk to anybody. And how that was really hurting our ability to talk to each other. And this is just, it's just snowballed from there.
Yeah. And who knows, it might not be an issue, but I can easily see it becoming an issue, especially kids who grow up on this stuff. I mean, I feel like we already see enough iPad kids who just don't have much for social skills.
I don't know. It doesn't it just become different? You're online socially. I mean, I think that is a really good question. And I think it's hard to know, like, what is truly worrying versus what is just, like, being an old person yelling at the cloud.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you can take that argument back to, like, oh, the TV is going to ruin everything. Mm-hmm. And then, but I don't know. It's hard to tell the true effects. I don't know. Maybe it did ruin a generation of boomers. But
I was going to say, I read an article that said that the TV has ruined society because TV brought us to our, not just a generation of people, but forever. Because TV brought us into our homes, and instead of spending time in the community, we now spend all of our time in our homes. And so it's why people spend less time at church, you know, spend less time at the park, spend less time hanging out with your neighbors. That was from the TV.
Yeah. It is interesting though. Ever since the TV with the internet, I feel like we've found community again, just not physically. VR is a weird experience with the community, being able to interact and talk with people. I think I went to a VR church service once, and that was a little surreal.
That's wild.
But there's like lots of social VR games too, like VR chat and what's the one the kids play, Gorilla Tag, where people are just all talking to each other, and it's kind of a surreal experience how communities have informed in that. And it's not just through a screen, it like feels more real, I guess, because it's in full 3D and you're interacting with people.
It's, but there's so much less accountability when you're interacting with people virtually too. I mean,
well, for now,
people don't have to be nice.
Do we want to talk about all the laws that are being passed that we're all going to have to
bear? Are there laws being passed?
The U.S. has one that's very similar to the U.K.'s that is going through committee right now, I think. But, yeah, the U.K. passed a law that for many things online, you have to verify your age with a facial ID.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and there's talk of that happening in the U.S. here, and it's already trickling out as YouTube announced they will roll out a policy here that you will have to verify your ID or verify your age, and Spotify too for some reason. I really don't understand Spotify's decision to do that.
I thought it was hilarious to see all of the people online up in arms that are like, well, I don't want to get kicked off because I watch children's shows, and it's like, if the algorithm doesn't know that there are plenty of adults who watch children's shows, you know, it's not very good.
No. It's just, I don't know. It's just crazy. It feels slightly authoritarian to all of a sudden start controlling the internet like that, because then you can start tracking people and start tracking what they're looking. I mean, you can already do that, but when you have like full government IDs and faces, you can start tracking what they're looking at, and then you can start censoring information about what's going on in the world, or start flagging those people if they're finding news they shouldn't be, as deemed by the government, that kind of thing. You can see it snowballing pretty easily.
Yeah, you have to wonder who is making those decisions. I mean, in some ways, I don't mind the ability if it's something I can toggle on and off as a parent, for example. There's a lot of really awful things on the internet, and I wouldn't want my small child to see them. And they're very easy to get to.
Yeah, it's at a certain point, though, I feel like it's the government mandating it rather than you should. I don't have a kid, so feel free to blast me. But like, it's
the reason to have a child. Yeah, so you can be like, well, what I think as a parent.
Some responsibility should be on the parent, not the government mandating that. But the YouTube one will be interesting because on the other hand, I know there's parents who just don't care. They just won't do anything, and it doesn't matter to them. So it's probably good that there is some age restriction, like on YouTube, for 10-year-olds whose parents just don't care.
I remember when I was 16, I went to see the movie 8mm, which is a film with Nick Cage about snuff films, which are very violent, graphic adult films. And when I was 16, that was before they really started carding people, which I was really into because they started right after I turned 17. And I think when I saw this movie, I was about I was probably a month until I turned 17 anyway, so I was basically the right age. But my friend and I went to see it, and afterward we were like, yeah, I wish we had been carded. That was
not okay.
We weren't old enough to watch that. I don't think I'm old enough to watch it now.
Yeah, some of the stuff I saw on Live Leak as a 14-year-old probably should have not seen, or most people shouldn't. There's lots of beheading stuff. But the internet was Wild West back then, it feels like. So maybe it is good to some extent that there is it, but the whole facial recognition does bring up concerns about it, like a surveillance state and everything. I know people are using video games to get around the facial ID. They're using like Death Stranding, a really photorealistic game. It was one of the top downloaded apps on the App Store in the UK because you can like, there's a really good photo mode in it, so you can make all sorts of facial expressions with Norman Reedus as a character in the game. So it was one of the top downloaded apps, that and VPN apps, so they could get around all the requirements, which I find hilarious.
I think it's really interesting because how do we craft a society that really supports it in a positive way? Because like, pretty much anybody is going to be like, yeah, I don't want the government to have all of the surveillance data, mm-hmm. even if it's useful. Like that feels invasive, but are we going to just let private companies? That's not really much better. They're just going to use it to sell us stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So who is left?
I was listening to something I forgot which, I'm pretty sure it was Facebook or something, but if they would like monitor teenage girls and if they deleted a selfie, they would use their algorithm to help identify that and then start targeting beauty ad products towards them.
Come on.
Because they're like, well, if they deleted a selfie, they probably have some image issue, like self-image issues. So then if we're going to take that data to start selling to advertisers that they've been deleted a selfie or two to start targeting beauty products.
That's so ick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty gross. So you can imagine, like, if we're doing that now, how much worse it could be if, I don't know.
Well, it goes back to if we're using AI as our therapist, like, it has all of this really secret stuff. I will say, though, like, as someone who has been to plenty of therapy as a person, AI does a pretty good job. Like, it says the things that it should say. I mean, it's obviously not the same. I'm not somebody who thinks it quite replaces it, but it has always impressed me. Like AI, all of the models do a nice job of saying the things you should say to somebody if they're thinking about something or if they're worried about something. It's
because Brock even literally has a therapist mode option on it for you to use it like as a personality, which is interesting.
I wasn't even in therapist mode and it was telling me to journal. They're like, meditate and journal. And you're like, yeah, I've heard that.
It is interesting because just this week, the governor of Illinois signed some legislation prohibiting AI therapy in Illinois, which is interesting. I do wonder about it because I thought within that Big Beautiful Bill too, they're pulling away states' rights to regulate AI. So I wonder how this falls under it, and or if this will be challenged in court or from the federal level. I'm not sure.
And I would wonder, like, what type of therapy, like charging people for therapy? Because you can't really stop people from just chatting with their AI. But you could, like, stop someone from presenting themselves as a therapist, but having you, especially with, like, telehealth. I mean, maybe it's more targeted toward that. I have no idea.
Yeah, because all it says in the press release, too, is prohibits anyone from using AI to provide mental health and therapeutic decision-making while allowing the use for administrative and supplementary support services for licensed behavioral therapists or professionals.
I mean, if you're going to pay for something, it should be a person.
Yeah, it sounds
at
like
those rates.
It sounds like they're trying to prevent like just apps marketing themselves as therapists to the general public.
Interesting. My meditation app has like a therapist in it. That's an AI. I wonder if that'll go away. Should look to see if it's still there.
only if they detect if you're in Illinois. It'll be geo-blocked. have to get a VPN in Illinois if you want to have therapy services.
Isn't that easy enough?
Yeah, but you can still geo-locate. But
you could ask AI how to set that up for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure people are using AI to set up their own VPNs in the UK right now. But I
am so interested.
Go ahead.
I was saying, I am so interested to see as we continue to encourage people to use AI, like how we supply that with energy and data centers. I mean, in that Theo Von podcast, they were talking about how do we get enough data centers? And Sam Altman made a comment about like, yeah, you know, you could cover the world with data centers, you know, at least a lot of the land masses, and he didn't seem that against it. That was so like that. Ooh, just I did not like that. Like, ew. Like that's no.
I could see an argument being made to destroy a lot of land in order to build data centers, but I do wonder if we couldn't expand beyond the Earth. Like, I saw we're going to put a they're going to put a nuclear reactor on the moon, apparently. No. I saw that was being pushed in Washington.
On the moon?
On
Isn't
the moon.
That a little close to us?
Not for a nuclear reactor. It's fine.
I read a fiction book about what happens when the moon breaks apart, and it was an end-of-life event.
Just build a new one. Like the Death Star.
We're really behind on all that space architecture that we need if we're going to do all these things.
Yeah, and I saw NASA's budget was getting cut a lot, so.
Who was thinking of this?
I don't know. We're going to build a reactor on the moon, but, oh, probably because it'll be funded by SpaceX. I don't know.
Well, maybe SpaceX can build that amazing array in a giant data center in space.
Yay. it'll be interesting. I don't know, but it is concerning. Like, this stuff takes so much energy to keep existing, let alone start expanding and training more models. It is concerning.
Well, and even if you think about the resources that it would take to build, you know, an Earth covered in data centers or something in the space, like that is a huge manufacturing scale that doesn't come from nothing.
Mm. Yeah, who's funding all this and why?
Where is it coming from?
Yeah, I don't know. He did talk about, too, how we have to get to nuclear fusion as fast as we can just to get to a cleaner source of energy that can provide more cleaner and more efficient energy. Like, we just got to adapt rather than, which, I mean, I'm sure will happen, but at the rate stuff is going right now, it's like he talked about you got to burn some gasoline before you can, like, make it more efficient, but or to save more in the long term. You might have to burn some more up front to save it in the long term, but I don't know. We could be burning a lot pretty quick, but I'd hope we could get to more cleaner technologies sooner rather than later.
I mean, we have a finite amount of resources, so we hope we don't burn through it all.
That's why we need to conquer the stars.
That's what we're going to do with Mars.
Yep. Going to mine it. Well, I think that about covers most of the major news stories this week.
Maybe someday I'll get my own GPT-5. I'm going to check it again. Restart it.
So you say maybe if you upgrade to the top of the line model, they'll grant it to you.
Still not here.
Still nothing. I'm sure it'll have it by the morning. It's got to be most people by now.
I have a last name that starts with a B. I'm not used to being at the end of the line.
See, I always fall in the middle, so I'm glad when it's randomized order.
Well, I'm excited to see what comes out next, I guess.
Yeah, and hopefully by the time we record next, we both had some more time to play with GPT-5, and we can give you our more thorough impressions and what we think of it.
Awesome. Thanks to everybody for listening.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on the inaugural podcast, and we hope to see you next time.
Your average podcast. News, tips, and debunking. From code to common ground, but your average podcast. Where freshly ice found, but your average podcast.
This episode of Bot Your Average Podcast was written, recorded, and produced by Jill Baber and Michael McCrory. Our theme music is original and lovingly bot-built.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are entirely our own and do not reflect the views of our employers, clients, or any organizations we are affiliated with, past, present, or future, AI overlords included.
Thanks for listening, and remember, think critically, question boldly, and don't be bot your average.
Nailed it. Yeah.